Life. I'm gonna do it my way.
You do it the right way.
I do it my way.
It's my way. Welcome to Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema. I'm Alonzo Duralde. I'm the film reviews editor for The Wrap, and I'm a regular appearing critic on What the Flick. You are Dave White of Movies.com.
That's true.
And we have guests and an airplane. Woo!
We have guests and an airplane.
Or a helicopter.
The helicopter deposited our guests.
Yes, here they come parachuting in.
Parachutes.
With Diana Ross.
They are the schmoes.
Is that you guys singing? Is that that recording?
Did you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
I can hear
come
you
in at the bottom end.
That was Dave, such a falsetto.
No. Sounded almost like a Christmas thing because I wanted to read Alonzo's book while it was playing.
that is Love Theme from Linoleum Knife.
Composed and performed by our friend Blue.
And I'm not singing. Although, when I was a teenager, I was the lone baritone in my church youth choir.
I would pay top dollar. I would actually ask Doc Emmett Brown to take me to that moment to watch that.
I was responsible for all the low notes.
He would solo on Way On Down.
The Hallelujah chorus and stuff.
And he wasn't even singing. He was literally just, he was like he would say, Way On Down. Anyone need to go there?
Right. It was my duty.
Elvira.
To Forever, forever. That was me.
Nice.
Okay. The schmoes are here.
Oh, I thought we were getting more about the church.
Yeah, okay.
Now we're talking about movies.
Okay. From the schmoes.
No, we're not getting into the movies yet. Let's keep your pants on.
From the schmoes, no podcast.
Empire of true, movie related.
First, your names. Christian Harloff.
Yes.
Say
Christian Harloff.
That's you.
That's me.
I am Mark Ellis.
Mark Ellis.
That's him.
That's the other one.
Thank you.
The other one.
You guys. Okay, a little more than 3 years
ago.
We've
been about 3.5-4 years.
We started like hanging out at screenings. Mm.
We started getting in that clique where there's a certain part of the movie theater where you always find Dave,
safety,
Alonzo, Christian, myself, and some other scattered people.
Yeah. We're aisle people.
Yes.
You know, I think there are center people. We're aisle people.
Well, we all feel the same about how we like to watch movies in our little bubble.
Yes.
You know, and we all have our rules. We all know each other's rules, too. If there's like, you know, if someone's talking, you're going to hear Dave go, quiet.
That is correct.
Turn off your phone. Yeah.
That is what will happen.
Lady started having a conversation in the middle of Step Up All In last night, by the way.
And well, her phone rang.
But
she was getting it. She got up and left, though.
Right, but in the leaving, she
stepped up and out.
The chatting began, and she just sort of made her way down the aisle. Blah, 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 blah.
Unless you're going to start dancing, get out of here.
I had to tap into my inner Dave. This is probably about 6 months ago. I was at a screening by myself, and there was a woman in front, a younger woman in front, and as soon as the movie starts, she takes out her phone and starts taking notes on her phone.
Oh,
no.
And
no,
I told
no,
her, I was no. like, hey, can you turn your phone off? And she's like, I'm taking notes. I'm reviewing the movie. I'm like, sweetheart, we're all reviewing the movie. And she just kind of looked shocked, like, oh, we're not supposed to do this? Like, No, you're not.
Yeah. Get yourself a little... If you want to take notes...
You take notes, right, Dave?
I take notes.
In the dark.
Crazy person.
And you've
like,
turned... But you've turned it into a science on how to do it in the dark.
I can write in the dark.
Yeah.
In the pitch black. I know what my letters feel like.
Right. I can't write in the light. I mean, my handwriting has gotten so awful since college.
There are moments when I can't read what I wrote after... But then I think, wasn't that important anyway.
There was an L.A. critic who will remain nameless who was infamous for showing up to screenings with one of those clicky light-up pens.
Yeah. He's not doing the job anymore. Do we have to keep him nameless?
Yeah, he's still alive.
I know who it is from hearing it.
And it was a bit of a sort of thing
where he was mean, too.
Yeah, and he was kind of...
One of the meanest people I've ever met.
He was old enough and with a powerful enough outlet that we had no choice. You know, like, you couldn't complain to the publicist about it because they weren't going to do anything. And he certainly wasn't going to respond to you asking him to knock it off.
Clicky light-up pen. He would show up late all the time. I was at a screening once where this cat showed up late, 20 minutes after the film had started. They stopped the movie and started it again.
For him?
Wow.
And this was 35 millimeter, not like digital where you just like press the rewind button. They had to literally, physically, you know, take the reel back.
And I remember thinking to myself, it's a good thing you're old. Because, oh man, I was enraged.
My favorite screening with him was we were about, there were, I think there was one other person there, and he sat in the back, groaned in agony through the whole thing, and then gave it a positive review.
So many stories.
I believe we've mentioned his name once before with regard to another film that you and I loved a lot, and that, so we can't talk about what that was.
No.
But he was in agony, and we were in ecstasy.
We were laughing loudly and enjoying it all the more for his not enjoying it.
Anyway.
We've enjoyed many screenings.
Well, I'm glad, you know, in a press screening, in real life, I don't do this. In real life, if I'm buying a ticket, well, in general, if I'm buying a ticket to a movie, and it's not a press screening, it's out in the world.
Yeah, with civilians.
Yeah. My first thought is, these people are not press. Which means they might not be weaklings. And or they might not have a gun.
Right.
So,
your voice alone will eradicate 95% of anybody going to a movie, but you're right, there's that other 5% that you can never tell. Right.
When I met Dave White, he was not a film critic yet, and I will always remember the packed house of Shine on opening weekend in Dallas. Lady with a crying baby, not leaving until he finally said, take your child outside.
It's so funny, and I don't know if Christian can shed some light on this, because I've never wanted to have kids. I'm not sure how they're made, and I think that maybe you soften your stance on babies in movie theaters a little bit because you have a child now.
Not at all.
The weirdest one I ever saw was I saw a woman taking a baby in a stroller to the midnight premiere, the Thursday midnight of The Immortals. And I was there to see it, to review it.
You don't remember the best baby story? You and I saw The Changeling. There was a woman who took her to see The Changeling. And
she left with a different baby.
Yeah. And
it's a fun gag to do.
I couldn't believe it. But no, I absolutely... My daughter, I've taken her to see... She's almost 3 years old. I've only taken her to see one movie in the theater. And I thought she was going to sit through maybe 45% of it.
Prisoners?
No. Frozen. She sat through...
Oh, wow.
She sat through 95% of the movie, but I you got to know the movie to take your kid to. Changeling and Immortals are not those movies. But Dave, I guess
I've seen parents at like the Rob Zombie Halloween at like midnight with little toddlers.
I couldn't find a babysitter. Then like, tough.
Yeah. The don't government go out. Needs to fund Child Protective Services so much more than that.
There are lots of channels on cable.
Just horrible, horrible people spawning.
Yeah, like, I'm annoyed by babies on airplanes, but it's like, what are you going to do? Have the choice to not bring your kid to see, you know, an R-rated movie at 11 o'clock at night.
But no,
it's just do.
It was funny, though, talking before... We've known each other now for 4 years, which is nuts.
That is weird, because it's like for three of those years we've been talking about you guys coming on this show, and every couple months we're like, yeah, you guys need to come on. Yeah,
we flirted. We got really close. We made some contact.
That's
we got thrown out at first.
That's right.
And now
texts
we're here.
Were exchanged.
Everybody's in town
from Justin to Kelly.
It happened when it was supposed to happen.
Actually, this is a perfect week for you guys to be here, because I just did the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, and he spent much of it talking about how young people don't care about the movie-going experience and how his, you know, 20-something boyfriend will watch YouTube clips or he'll watch like a 10-hour marathon of Netflix stuff. But the idea of sitting in a dark theater for 2 hours, not in control, not being able to pause, not having it on your own screen, you know, is not a thing that the kids are down for. But every, like, teen film fanatic that I know who has added me on Facebook or found me on Twitter usually finds me through you guys. So y'all obviously have an audience of young people who still go to the movies.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with Brett on that point. I think that a lot of it has to do with ticket sales. I think ticket prices. I think a lot of it has to do with oversaturations. There's so many things coming out now, and I think that people, especially younger people, have genres that they go to. And you're not going to see, like, most young people when it comes to Marvel movies. I bet you a lot of people went and saw Guardians. Younger people too. It just depends on the movie that's coming out.
I think the bigger movie isn't going to get hurt by any sort of Netflix or explosion on cable TV or being able to DVR stuff or whatever you have that's in the future. That's not the one that's going to get hurt. It's the smaller films that you don't need to see opening weekend, because the big reason to go see Guardians of the Galaxy opening weekend is so that you can talk about it with your friends afterwards. You can be caught up. Same reason why, like, House of Cards, the new season comes out on Netflix, and you got to binge watch it that weekend, or else somebody's going to spoil
Some
it for
jerk.
You. So you have to have to make sure that every entertainment,
they kill, blah blah blah.
Yeah, you want to know that, and so any sort of entertainment that is going to be potentially spoiled for you, you got to make sure you see that.
Yeah, and well, jumping off of Mark's point too, the reason that I think that's very true in the case of Marvel, because it all ties together now, even though Guardians not necessarily yet, but it's got that serial feel to it.
Plus, if you're a kid and you don't have, like, a great place to take a girl back to, then you need to go to the movie theater to finger bang. That's where you do that.
Exactly. But I will say, though, I do think there is something to one of the reasons people aren't going to the movies is combining the fact that what we were talking about earlier was you don't have to deal with people in the theater. You know, you can, if you, because the theater systems, the way they are, the nice televisions, the quality now, you can enjoy, and movies come out on Blu-ray so fast now. If you miss something that you necessarily didn't want to spend the money on in the theater, you see it, you make a movie night out of it. So I think that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I don't think people are watching movies less. I think people are going to...
I think they realize that people are awful, okay? People are awful to be in public with, but it's worth braving that if you want to go see The Avengers 2.
Right.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, we were talking about the movie-going experience, not necessarily just movies themselves, but, yeah, like I said, one of the reasons that Gravity was such a big hit was because that was this rare movie in recent years, probably the first one since Avatar, where the word of mouth was not just, you have to see this, but you have to see this on the big screen.
Absolutely.
And so few movies get that kind of endorsement from people. It's like, yeah, you need to see it. Oh, okay, well, then when it comes on Netflix, sure. But I'm like, no, you have to see it in IMAX, or at least on a big screen.
Yeah, you know what? Gravity was a call my mom and say, you need to go out. Like, 100 Foot Journey, you can watch that on your iPad, Mom. But Gravity, you have to see that.
You know what the other movie that people kept saying again and again was a theater experience, which I was shocking. It's not the Avatar and it's not Gravity, was Snowpiercer.
Yes.
A lot of people said, see Snowpiercer in the theater.
Interesting.
I didn't listen to any of them.
I'd agree. I did.
I would have liked to have listened to them.
It's awesome.
But you can tell, watching it on the smaller screen, I would have liked to have seen it in the bigger screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see that one in the theater.
I too disagree with Mr. Brett Easton Ellis, because I remember seeing Claude Lanzmann's 3-hour and 45-minute Last of the Unjust at the Royal, where an entire crew of teen street dancers came in and sat
teen
there.
Dancers.
They were rapt. They were attentive and so respectful, and they no cell phones, no texting. They wanted to understand.
Right. Well, you brought up our audience too. Our audience is movie lovers, like movie fanatics. So if they're going to the theater, they're going to pay attention to it, and they don't want to pause it. They're going there to experience it.
Right.
So,
No. Believe me, I mean, part of why I kind of didn't buy into his sort of naysaying about young people in movies was y'all's fans, because when they find us, they have a lot of questions, and they're really interested in stuff, and they want to know about
They're
things.
Like, we love the schmoes. What are these old dudes going to be like?
And they're isn't it funny? Because we've had conversations about YouTube fans. We have tapped into an audience on YouTube that are basically unicorns, because they are nice. They are film lovers. There's not a lot of... I mean, if I'm wrong.
On YouTube?
Wow. But I mean, but guys, but our
most of our comments
come
like
from YouTube.
It used to be universal across the board, 100%. They were all very supportive, and then we got bigger, and then you have the trolls inevitably. But our troll to real fan who has an interesting point to say ratio is really really good. We're really happy.
Well, that's what I mean. The ones that have found you, I hope that they've been nice.
We have no bad people contacting.
Oh, we can send you the trolls if you want.
Level.
Oh no, yeah. I've got my own on What the Flick. Thanks.
Yeah. Oh, he gets them on What the Flick.
Yeah.
They're all like, "You are overweight and homosexual." Like that's their thing. Mm.
They say the same thing about me.
Well, you know, look at the man in the mirror.
Yeah, fatty. Yeah. This is an audio program. He's real thin.
Oh, thank you very much.
Subjective.
But so, we've been doing this for almost 4 years now. And have we ever had a negative word?
Not really.
Like, there was a negative iTunes.
There was one iTunes review. There was,
there was one letter from the lady who couldn't listen because of me. Because she didn't like my voice,
right.
And she was like, "It's so awful and rumbly, and I don't like
there's
it."
There's a listener who torments his mother by listening to us because apparently she doesn't like
she's,
us.
Yeah, his
I
mom.
Love
his,
that.
There's a listener who makes his mom listen with him. And she's like, "They're so unprofessional," and I just think that's great.
I think our audience is small enough that it's not like we've accidentally reached anybody who would not be into it. Of course, now that y'all are on the show, I'm sure a lot of your fans will be listening to this episode and be like,
now.
"What is it with these guys? Yeah. Why are you on this boring show?"
It really is weird when you open the floodgates and we call our fan base Schmoville like it's a town, and it was a town, now it's a city, and like a city, there's all parts of the city. There's the places you go, there's the places you don't go late at night.
There's the mean and rough.
That's right,
edge of town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's where the darkness is.
It's been fun to watch it grow. I mean, it really has been, and I think that it's and it's also learning. I mean, because we even sitting there talking to you guys, we've learned tons from you guys, like even with the press screenings and listen to, because we were guys that just crashed the party.
Right.
We really were. We turned on our flip cam in 2007.
Well, you guys all came, you came from the same place that he wound up on.
Current TV. That's right, the Rotten Tomatoes show.
Yeah, the Rotten Tomatoes show.
Well, Current TV, that was our show. I think I told you this, Alonzo. Like, what happened was, Current TV, Mark and I.
I do remember.
That's where we started. Was on Current TV, and then we didn't even do reviews on camera together. We did them separately.
Yeah.
Then
because we're both comics, and I was like, I don't want to share the stage with somebody. That sounds stupid. These are my jokes.
And I started pushing. He's like, I don't know if it's gonna work. And then the chemistry was there. We did it for about a year, and then the girl that was working with us there, she said, let's pitch something to Rotten Tomatoes about doing a show. And we pitched it to them, and we started developing this show. And it was it. Mark and I were going to be the hosts. It was all set and done. And then she's like, yeah, it's going to go on the air. And then 2 weeks later, she gets a call. She's like, I'm leaving the company. I'm like, why? She's like, they don't know what they're doing here. I'm going. And I go, she's like, but you guys should stay. It's fine. Host your show. Do your thing. And, you know, we'll meet back up. And I go, okay, well, I should at least talk to Current TV and figure out what's going on. And then we're in Alaska, right?
Yeah, we were on the road doing stand-up in Alaska, which is the best place to hit rock bottom with your career. Which is when you're up in Alaska, and we're like, we could just work on an oil rig up here. I mean, it's an option.
Well, we looked, and someone sent us an email, and we found out the Rotten Tomatoes show's announced with Brett Ehrlich and someone else. And we're like, wait.
Ellen Fox.
And Ellen Fox. And I'm like, oh, I guess we're not doing the show anymore. But it actually worked great, because of that, we said, you know what? Screw it. Let's just start a YouTube channel.
We did set the record for most drinks at that Alaska bar after the show.
Yes, you did.
And that's saying something for
Alaska.
It was a
good night. Yeah.
Well, no, I'll tell you what, that's the reason that we started this show, is because that show got canceled, you know? And another show I was on got canceled, and I needed to have a thing that I couldn't get fired from.
If you get everything you want too easily, then it becomes the prequels. And if you have to work and find windows when the door closes, then it becomes the original trilogy. So,
yes.
It's the thing my dad always used to tell me too. Is like, you really cannot judge the past if you can't see the future, because we're sitting here.
Ooh, that's good. Is your dad Yoda?
He is.
That's good.
So we're sitting here.
That's why Christian's green.
Yeah, it's true. But that's the thing. We both wouldn't be sitting here doing our things had it not.
And the size of a puppet.
Yeah.
I'm really fat, and Christian's 3 feet tall. That's the schmoes now.
Really fat he is.
And Frank Oz's forearm has disappeared. And never mind.
What movies are we talking about?
What movies are we talking about? Well, these gents just came back from Comic-Con, so they've seen some things, but not others. We have all seen Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. There's going to be one of us, I think, here who can give a positive spin on it. I will say this, though. I will say this.
So it's not
please,
you.
Please
it's
begin.
Not, it's not me. This movie, I was a fan of the 1990 version.
Sure.
When it came out.
How old were you in 1990?
When I saw... I was 11.
Okay.
When I saw it.
Yeah.
So when I saw that movie,
I was 25.
I was 23, and I saw it. So what does that say about me? Yeah.
But I enjoyed that movie. Wasn't I enjoyed the cartoon? I enjoyed a lot of it. So going into this movie, I was worried that first the whole alien scandal that there were going to be aliens at one point. And then they fixed it up. And I'm like, these turtles, they might look really horrible. I don't know how it's going to look. As I go in, I was worried about the turtles. The turtles were the best part of the movie. The part I disliked was the movie. The movie that the turtles were in. Yeah.
Mm. Were you guys fans? I mean, you said you were 25 and you're 23. No. So did you guys ever care about that, or was that just it missed your childhood?
It was not my childhood.
I was like 10 years too old.
I was
15
I was,
years.
It's like House of Power Rangers.
Well, yeah. I was a comics nerd in the '80s, so I remembered the black and white comic book coming.
Yeah,
out.
When they all had, or then they colorized, and then they all had the red bandanas together.
Go. Exactly. Yeah. And so and then I remember that kind of that was this weird thing where it was there was this sort of famous comic book. Crash of the 90s when everybody was doing all those stupid variant covers and became Beanie Babies and everybody was collecting and nothing was worth anything. Right. The first comic book store crash was people buying up copies of all these lame-o, black and white parody versions of what was already a parody of Frank Miller and not selling and then going under.
Right.
So I remembered it from that, and then I remember the very first episode of the cartoon I think I saw while I was on the vacation I took immediately after graduating from college. And I watched a few episodes of the show. I thought it was charming or whatever. And I saw the first movie. I think I even had the cassette from Pizza Hut.
Coming out of our shelves.
Yes, yeah. And they were a band.
Well, see, it's funny you bring that up because I remember I loved the Ninja Turtles when I was a kid. I loved the cartoon and the movie blew me away. I thought it was great. The Secret of the Ooze I loved. I remember when the Turtles they did the Pizza Hut thing. And then my mom said the Turtles are going to be on Oprah. But the Ninja Turtles going to be on Oprah. Me and my brother got so excited. And when they came out, it wasn't the same Turtles costumes from the movie. It was different. Right. They had weird spots on them, and it looks like they came down with some horrible disease. And then you spin that into this new movie when the Turtles don't look like they used to.
Right.
I thought the CGI was fantastic. And even from the trailer, I loved how the Turtles looked because, they're uglier. They're just uglier turtles than they used to be. They're not as cute.
Right.
But they're turtles that are mutants that live in a sewer. They're not going to be models.
Their dad is a rat. He doesn't know much about grooming.
And the rat got uglier, too. Splinter got almost unwatchable.
He's gross.
You want to turn away. It's like visiting a really sick friend in the hospital. I don't want to look at Splinter anymore.
The movie, though, was written, I know that it's for kids, but from where
it's utterly for children.
But it felt it felt like a 90s movie for kids. It didn't feel like a today's movie
Correct.
For kids.
I felt like the Turtles were more geared towards adults. I think the Turtles were more geared towards the nostalgia for the adults watching.
I like that.
And then the humans were throwing out jokes that were meant just for the little kids.
Yeah.
I thought both of them were. I think that we'll probably argue about how good I thought Megan Fox was as April O'Neil. I thought she was really, really good in that
role. That was actually my favorite part of the movie. I think my take actually is of the opposite of Christian's. I thought that the beginning part where they were sort of setting up the world and all, and you got April O'Neil, I thought, okay, this is actually kind of interesting, and they're sort of going to base it in this real world. And then once the turtles come in, they were so... I found them really flat personality wise. I mean,
Michelangelo. Michelangelo was shown he was the best turtle to me because he was the only real comic relief that hit in the movie. All three other turtles, I'm a Leonardo guy. I love Leonardo because he's the leader, he's the point guard. Donatello, I was like, whatever, nerd. Raphael was kind of like the weird, just pouty,
the goth girl,
Ron Artest of the group.
But Alonso, you think that's maybe because you weren't a fan of the?
It may well be, but I mean, I was familiar enough and I knew what I was getting as far as those characters and. I just thought the way they were written, and I found them weird to look at. I mean, the CG as far as...
They're not attractive. They're not attractive beings.
Yeah. I mean, the CG was fine as far as, they did look like they were occupying that space, but I just found them kind of just disconcerting to look at. And then I just got really bored with it, and I know Michael Bay didn't direct it, but it felt like his kind of thing just from the sort of... big meandering action sequences that make no sense to the Oscar winner embarrassing herself Whoopi Goldberg in this case there was a great review online that said this is another movie that ends on the top of a skyscraper with a flashing red countdown clock and people hanging from one hand off scaffolding.
But that's the Turtles. I give them a pass because that's a franchise that we've come to know and love, and that's what you want. Having said that last action scene really disappointed me because none of them could even lay a finger. They didn't even get a bruise on Shredder.
And for a kids' movie, there was a lot of debris landing on innocent bystanders.
Yeah,
that was really weird.
That's another thing. Kids don't care about this.
The tone was all over the place.
Kids are fine with mass death. They don't care.
Michael Bay, another reason I felt his stamp was all over it is because what Michael Bay has been doing lately, especially with that crap fest that was Transformers 4, was that he focuses so much, like, we're Transformers 4, by the way. You're the fourth movie in, no more human stuff. I'm good. Focus on the robots. They don't do that. This movie, too, I actually, you know, we just talked about the Turtles for me, the parts I like, the part where they're in an elevator and they're like rapping.
My favorite
together.
Scene.
It's the best.
Because the camera doesn't move.
No, and I wanted
there was
more.
Some shaky cam at the beginning that really scared me.
But I wanted more of that. And Will Arnett didn't know what he was doing in the movie. He was doing like a bad Michael Keaton impression. He's like, oh, you know, maybe we're here, but, you know, not there, but can I look at your ass? And it's like, and it's just, it was so all over the place. And I didn't like April O'Neil at all. I thought it was just really bad dialogue. Really bad. Well, like 90s dialogue.
The dialogue is terrible. An aside that has actually nothing to do with the quality of the
film. I love your asides, David.
What is up with Megan Fox's mouth? She does not close her mouth.
That's good.
Is that the
where
new?
I come
is
from.
That no? I get it.
That's a quality.
I'm down. I understand utterly where you're coming from.
I like a dame that keeps her mouth open.
But is this the new at rest face for the foxy chick? That's sort of like.
With those, the pouty lips that,
like,
never quite touch.
Like a half inch to an inch open all the time.
Well, that and trembling behind a desk, a table, a wall.
Where do you want her to go, Christian?
I want her to
There's
fight.
Destruction
you
everywhere.
You got Black Widow out there. You got Emily Blunt. Come on.
She's a young reporter.
So
and there's four turtles that are fighting the crime for her. 90s. I would get behind a thing. Because you have this problem with her trying to take pictures of the action, and that's what she
with
does.
With the flash on.
It's nighttime.
Hide behind something.
It's nighttime. You can't take a picture without a flash.
Hide
at night.
Behind something. She's like,
I
don't want to be seen, so I'm going to flash in front of the turtle's face. They'll be surprised when they see it.
Did you not just say that you didn't want her to be hiding, and now you're telling her to hide? You need to get your story straight.
I'm talking about when she's scared, man.
Keep your mouth open, Fox.
She is a local. She's a local TV reporter. They do not pay her enough to like mix it up with a.
She might not even be on
salary.
Whoopi might be paying her by the hour. You know, I think the people came into this movie ready to hate Megan Fox as April O'Neil, because when she was announced, everybody said, "Oh, she's too big of a star, or she's too stripper hot to play April O'Neil." When the previous installment of April O'Neil in the first 1990 film was Judith Hogue, and she was. I'd have two beers, then maybe have a conversation with her.
Right.
And then she got super hot but useless when she was Paige Turco in 2 and 3. And so I think this April O'Neil was the best one we've ever had. Did I just say how much I know about
the idea that April O'Neil is such an iconic character that people have opinions about who's going to play her and how? Like, oh my God, she's playing Lady Macbeth? What?
Right, right. She's the most famous character to ever have a yellow jacket, with the exception of Curious George's dad.
He had the hat.
I think he had a raincoat, too.
I think it was a whole yellow ensemble.
Nothing underneath the raincoat.
That's right.
So that movie sucked.
No, I liked that. I gave it a fresh score on Rotten Tomatoes. I gave it 3.25 out of 5.
Yeah, no, I understand that perspective. I feel like this is just such a perfunctory, you know, one-dimensional children's film that children will enjoy themselves. And that's all that it needed to be.
I would have liked a two-dimensional.
There was no, you know, metaphorical anything going on. It was an action movie for kids.
But that's the thing. I don't think it needed to be that, because
no, it didn't need to be.
Right.
But it could have been anything it wanted to be if it had been done better.
Well, what 1990 the 1990 version had? It had the darker themes. The comic book had darker themes to it as well. And not everything needs to be dark. And funny, like Mark said, these are turtles cracking jokes and eating pizza.
Right.
So, but I just think that, you know, they could have went a little higher level, because a lot of the hardcore fan base is in the 30s. 40s.
Oh, dude, these. Three dudes right in front of me, like, all about between the ages of 20 and 30.
Yeah.
They were losing their
And they had fun with it?
Ish. Yeah.
And, so, I mean, what do we know?
Look,
they had a great time.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I look at the turtles as my demographic as much as anybody else's. Uh oh, quick, April, get behind something. There's action happening.
Takes a flash picture.
Again, it's nighttime. That's how you pick up images at night. Is you need a flash.
Hide behind something.
Moving on.
Who saw the 100-foot journey here?
I did, and it was really funny because I took a picture of the... what Christian and I like to do a lot on our Instagram is we'll take a picture of the movie and then just see what our fans think we're going to think of it.
Yes.
And one of my friends, she's a really funny comic, Eliza Schlesinger, wrote on my Instagram, this is a movie you take your mom to see.
Yes.
And could not have been more accurate.
No,
because
it's fully
you take photographs during a movie?
Well, before.
Before. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, before, you know, because you go into the screening, sometimes
turn
they just haven't projected what's there, and then you take the picture, and then, yeah. I know, I never check. I hate people who I get mad at Christian for occasionally if his thumb moves at all.
I never.
And it's out of the corner of my eye. I get really, really. You guys have seen me. I'm a flight risk at movies. I will get up from my seat and walk all the way to the front if anything around me is annoying me. So I'm very touchy in theaters. But no, I thought the 100-foot journey was good. It was very charming for what it was. I liked Helen Mirren and Om Puri were great together. And you know, it's nothing that I'm going to recommend to our hardcore fan base of, you know, that loves Marvel movies, but.
Yeah.
Fine.
No, the reason I was just pointing at you, Alonzo, is because I get angry at him when the lights are going down and he's still fiddling with his phone, like maybe about to turn it off or finishing a text or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, no. You should have done this like 3 minutes ago. You knew
it's
going to start.
I'm going to be on Alonzo's side in this.
It's going to start at 7:10.
Please.
The movie starts at 7. That means 7:10. And if your phone isn't off by like 7:08, you're bad. You're a bad person.
I totally... Look, my ideal movie theater is you have the huge screen, and then on either corner, you have gun turrets with guys in bear costumes with guns aimed at the audience.
Yes.
So if anything happens, the first one is a paintball pellet. The second one is a rubber bullet. The third one is real. And he gets shot.
I just want like a dome on movie theaters where there's no phone or cell... Or internet coverage. Yeah. And that way we just
like it's all encased in lead or something.
Exactly.
Your phone just shuts off. Like you get no power when you walk.
What if we magnetize the ceiling so when you walk in it just sucks your phone and then at the end of the movie all the phones just
all your belongings.
Like in Lucy.
And the other thing, what's with these people who take their feet off their socks off and put their feet up on the seats?
God.
Yeah, the feet on the seat has to stop. I don't care if nobody's sitting in the front seat. Somebody can see your stupid foot hanging up there. Feet were meant to be on the ground.
Someone's head is eventually going to be there. So gross.
So anyway, so that was my thought about the 100-foot journey.
I missed it, but it seems vanilla to me.
It's very vanilla. Yeah. Vanilla with a little cardamom, perhaps. Because, this is all about spices!
So here's what happens.
It's super Oprah-y, and it's from the director of Chocolat. So
maybe people want to know what it's about.
Did Oprah and Spielberg both produce it?
Yes.
Okay.
What happens is, this family from India... They are driven out of their country due to political unrest.
Political reasons.
Yeah. By people who set fire to their home
and their
restaurant. Yeah. They're a family of cooks.
The mom bites it.
The mom bites it, but they save the spice cabinet.
The spice
bucket.
Suitcase.
The suitcase of spices.
It's mom spices.
Right.
Those spices
and
are really good.
She would have wanted
it. Hail Mary's the spice bucket. I keep saying bucket. Box.
It's like a briefcase.
It's a box. It's like a briefcase. And then she martyrs herself in the fire. But not before telling her intuitive, talented prodigy chef of a son, sea urchins taste of life, don't you think?
Oh, what's the ghosts one?
And she says, you cook to make ghosts. Ghosts, spirits that live on in every ingredient.
Oh, yeah, that's how she rationalizes killing live things to eat them. It's like, you just killed a chicken, and I'm sorry you killed
a chicken.
But its ghost is going to rise up in the smoke that we use to cook it, and then it's going to be free at last.
Its ghost goes in your nose and makes you think, I'm going to eat that dead chicken. Thanks, ghost.
Perhaps Vindaloo style.
Thanks, ghost chicken. So then she, as she is cooked in the fire, her ghost rises up and lives with the widowed father. Mm-hmm. And ghost wife talks to him all the time.
But I love that you never see ghost wife.
No, you don't. It's not like that. It's
a,
not
a like, rare moment of pulling back.
Yeah.
It's not like What's-Her-Face in that other movie. What was the...
How I Met Your Late Mother.
The one that I always call Ghost Wife.
Met Your Late Mother,
that's
yeah.
That's not the name of that movie.
Oh, the one, the Nicholas Sparks
movie.
Safe Haven.
Oh, that was so stupid.
I call that movie Ghost Wife.
Yeah, I love that you call it Ghost Wife.
And
I
so...
Call
it How
that's the, a good, very good, too.
Thank you.
So this Ghost Wife is never seen, but she's always talking to Om Puri.
Yes.
And that dude is my favorite thing in this film.
His voice in your... He is Indian Dave White. That voice is very, very deep and growling, and it's perfect to square off against uptight Taskmaster Helen Mirren.
That's right, because you know, off camera, by the end of that movie, that those two are...
banging.
Getting it. And they even... She even says to the end, "You're my almost boyfriend," which means they have already...
You are my FB.
They have already, yeah, they've already banged it out.
The 100-foot journey for 8 inches.
Oh, walk on!
Helen Mirren is that, I was kind of bummed I missed it because I could watch her drink a soda can for 2 hours. Even if it's a vanilla movie, I still like to watch what she does in movies like that. And, you know, to watch an actor of that caliber, whatever material they're given, it's fun to watch. You know, even like Mark, if you want to use a sports reference, with like watching like Michael Jordan play, even if he's playing against a crappy team, you still want to see what he's going to do.
Yeah, no, and she's fine. She and Om Puri have a fun chemistry, and then the young cooks, which are, you know, Manish Dayan, from who was on 90210. I don't know if you ever watched the new version, but he's on that. He's real cute. And then Charlotte Le Bon, who was just in that that Yves Saint Laurent movie. If y'all saw that one.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
She's a French-Canadian TV presenter and weather girl.
Yes. I enjoyed her performance.
She's got that sort of button-eyed, gamine, Audrey Tautou.
She is like if Amelie and Winona Ryder met...
And a Keen painting.
...in space France and fused their genetic material and robbed Amanda Seyfried of her eyeballs and created a new human being.
You got go picture.
That is
her. I would love to watch that process. Does it look like Species when Natasha Henstridge crawls out of the egg?
It was one of the rejected Alien sequel pitches.
Yes.
So no, like they have nice chemistry, and you know the oldsters do too. And it was one
they
of those.
They have to overcome racism.
Yeah,
and
it was one of those movies
other
where
types of xenophobia.
Where I could tell I was being manipulated, but it was being manipulated well. Yeah. So I was like, okay, fine.
And Disney does that. It's a Disney movie, yeah.
Oh, it's DreamWorks.
It's DreamWorks. The same factor.
It's Spielberg, Oprah, and Lassie Hallström. That's a deadly combo. But it's always willing to go with it. Christy Lemire said it is a late '90s Miramax movie. Yeah. Basically, it's very middle brow.
It totally is. What I love about it is that their van breaks down. The Indian family's van breaks down in rural France, and they find a mechanic that is right next to this restaurant, and the mechanic fixes the car right away, and then you never see another automobile in the rest of the movie. Helen Mirren gets driven in one in the first 10 minutes, and then it's just people riding bikes like it's the movie
being
The Village.
Picturesque.
There are exactly two scenes where people are talking on cell phones. You never see a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is
you never see a microwave.
A fantasy, and you shouldn't.
No, absolutely.
There should be no.
There's no KFC bucket.
What I was going to say though was like I was willing to let myself be manipulated, and then the movie goes off on this tangent. That's this entire third or fourth act that is totally pointless. Yeah. And you know, somebody on Twitter said, 100-foot journey resolves all of its problems in the first hour and then keeps going.
Oh, and then he goes to Paris to be a celebrity chef.
Yeah, and you know, gets seduced by the dark side of molecular gastronomy.
Oh, and then I guess we can give away spoilers on this a little bit
for
the 100-foot journey. Yeah. So, Christian, he goes off to Paris, right, to be this fancy celebrity chef, And it's kind of inferred in the film that he's just banging broads left and right in this movie.
The ladies love him. That's what they say.
Comes
when he
back
goes off to Paris.
Home for homecoming to cook a meal for everybody, and it's just Charlotte Bun's like, I don't need to see a test results or anything. You're fine to go. You're good to go.
Yeah. I know you were good.
That's right. And he just looks and does a John Lovitz. False!
But again, these are things you question after the movie, and I always appreciate when a movie can make me not think about these things while I'm actually watching it. So.
Well, sometimes it's good to be manipulated in a movie, though, to realize life is as bad as you think it is, but this time, it isn't.
Yeah. If it's done skillfully, like, you know, I mean, E.T. I kind of point to as sort of the classic, like, that's a movie movie that is pulling your strings nonstop, but it's Yo-Yo Ma.
As soon as that movie ends, I am rooting for the government again. I want them to find that alien. We got to do some tests. We got to see what they were doing on our planet, boys.
Quarantine the thing.
Yes.
But the one... What this film is really about is about, you know, the aspiration to have an incredibly simple life where someone is always cooking you amazing food.
Yeah.
And you remain, you know, uncorrupted by every new innovative thing around you. Also, you remain uncorrupted by cruelty, because it's about people battling against, you know, that small town racism which exists,
especially in France.
Yeah. And speaking of its location, it's a fantasy France, because right now actual France is being rendered, you know,
asunder.
Yeah, or not rendered, rent.
Yeah.
Rent asunder by social problems. I mean, like the immigration situation over there is such that people are freaking out left and right constantly.
Oh, so this movie takes place in modern times?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Where apparently, you know, there is no crazy anti-Muslim, you know, thing going on over there. But there absolutely is right now.
Yeah, we got to keep all these foreigners out of France unless they know how to cook really good Indian food.
Yeah, like there's a whiff of that in this movie, but it gets, like, tamped down super quickly. Yeah.
That's the real Disney live action Remember the Titans fingerprints in this movie. Is the one scene where it's like, you know what, this French guy, he just has these redneck friends that he can muster up at any time to go, you know, try to burn the place down and spray paint "Go Home Indians" and all that crap, and then it's just kind of washed away the next scene.
Right. Yeah. They spray paint "France for the French" mm-hmm. on their house and then set it on fire again.
And I love that it was on Bastille Day too. It's like, yeah, when the French day, we're feeling so French today.
And this was your favorite nice moment where you got all kind of like
my one sort of like "damn you stepmom" movie that's our when a movie like it does something super super underhanded and you go anyway,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Helen Mirren like walks across the street with an umbrella and starts washing the graffiti off the wall, and I was like, oh, movie, I can't resist you. But then I could.
I will not rest until I find out the ingredients of the omelet that he makes for her. Because
did it look delicious?
I went on.
I
went online, and there is a recipe for the 100-foot journey omelet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it requires like 5 different herbs that you mince very, very finely. And I'm thinking, I can do that.
You better be within 100 feet of a bathroom.
That's right.
Yeah. Just in case.
That's where the name came from.
But in the movie, though, he dumps some spices into it.
Right.
And that's not in the internet recipe.
Well, it's an off-menu item. It's like animal style in and out.
I need to know so I can recreate.
We don't have a spice briefcase, so it may be something that we cannot get.
You can get anything on the internet. I just ordered a jar of India relish online.
It's actually how I got Mark.
So I can bake. That's right.
I showed up from Russia.
There's a recipe from a recent issue of like either Savour or Bon Appetit, where Ernest Hemingway's favorite hamburger is in the magazine, and it requires that you get Beaumont seasoning, which is not common. It's out there, but it's not super common, and India relish, which is it's an old timey kind of relish. Mm-hmm. That never is in the grocery store anymore. So I went online. I ordered both of these things off the internet, so I can make Ernest Hemingway's hamburgers.
We will report on these.
Yeah,
we will be here.
But
let's eat some hamburgers. Let's wrestle afterwards. Have a Hemingway night. Drink some scotch.
Who wants a fight? When I see a cooking show or a somebody making some food in a movie, I think, I'll do that.
Yeah. See,
I'm going to do that.
I feel the same way. I don't know if, because we all saw Chef here, right? So
yes.
You see something like Chef or something like 100 Foot Journey where food plays such a prominent role.
Yes.
And again, it's during the movie I get swept away in this, and I'm like, man, I should try cooking stuff. I went to Taco Bell on the way home. It's just not my speed at all, and I don't like handling dead raw animals.
Oh, shit.
Like,
I have no problem with that.
I love
you
eating.
Gotta get over that if you want to eat the nice.
There's not a there's not a single thing in Babette's Feast that I think, oh, I could make that. Like, Kaio sarcophage?
With enough practice, I could do any of it.
Really?
And I cook all the time. Like, we don't eat out at restaurants very often, and I am constantly berating Alonzo about fast food because I just won't do it. And
no fast food.
I don't,
for Dave.
Unless I'm in an extreme hurry.
Not even In-N-Out.
Absolutely. Well, In-N-Out is different.
Right.
In-N-Out is different.
I agree with you. I'm on the same page. That's why I said not even
in. In-N-Out is different. That's a whole other thing.
Okay. Respect.
But I cook all the time, and so when I'm constantly watching cooking shows, I make dinner almost every night that we're home, and I make a real dinner.
Well, I get mad at Alonzo for eating fast food too. If I made you a nice spread every night,
I
bag of Burger King.
I don't eat fast food when he's made dinner.
Yeah. I don't want lasagna. You got filet of fish right down the line.
But that's, I mean, so when I see this kind of thing, I'm always in my head thinking, oh, I'm going to do that. I only watch cooking shows out of my own sense of personal greed. Like, I need. I see Nigella or Jamie Oliver or Laura Calder making these things, and I think, I need to eat that. So when the show's over, I go to Gelson's, I get the ingredients, and I start making it.
That's see, awesome. Food is like...
benefits from this.
Yeah. Some people got, when the Golf Channel came out, people were already obsessed with golf, and then they just took it to a new level because you could have golf 24 hours a day. You could practice your swing in your living room. Food is the same way. Now there's food on every channel.
Yeah, there
you
is.
Can constantly look at stuff that you think you can bake.
And it's funny because that show, The Best Thing I Ever Ate, like I would write anything that was in LA, I would write it down and I'd say, I'm going to try it.
I'm going there, yes. Yeah.
There is a weird thing now, though, about watching people eat or watching people cook and eat. Like, that is so much of what the entire Food Network and cooking channels about. Next week we're going to talk about the trip to Italy, which I just saw last night, which is basically 2 hours of watching Steve Coogan and Rob Brydon eat in Italy. You know,
and that's another real appealing thing about these movies, though, is that it makes you. I don't like traveling that much, so it makes you want to go to France. Mm. This movie does, or it makes you want to go to Italy.
It makes you want to go to postcard France, at least.
France, whatever alternate unit, space France,
space France. Yes. I think the culture's current food obsession is about achievement. Like, you want to achieve that sort of middle brow sense of luxury or comfort, well-being, you know. And in its douchier aspect, that kind of secular, spiritual mumbo-jumbo.
Soul is cleansed.
Yeah.
By this
and it's
gumbo,
all about the preparation and is it local? Is it authentic? This idea of touching something authentic, which is also one of the themes of this film, which is, although it doesn't go overboard with it, with the idea of, you know, oh, look, there's this uptight white lady and the people of color are going to teach her how to really live.
That's right, and once she has a bite of that omelet, then she will be more accepting of other cultures.
Exactly, and so
I haven't seen this omelet. And
fortunately, the film doesn't go whole hog in that.
Yeah,
like
it's not like The Visitor.
It's not like The Visitor. It's not like other sort of magical brown people kind of films, which are racist, basically, even though they exist under the guise of
teaching uptight white people how to be better.
Well, they exist under the umbrella of let's all love each other and be in the same gang and stuff like that. But they do play on racist ideas. And so this one doesn't do that too much. They knock it out really quickly, and they move
on. Matt Atchity had an interesting point where he said that usually the movie is about the white person going into the other culture and learning their ways and then helping them out.
Yes.
And this is actually the opposite, where it's the brown guy who goes into French culture and learns their ways and actually makes their stuff better.
It's the opposite of Million Dollar Arm.
And it's the same director of Chocolat, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty much
thematically
it's super
similar,
Chocolat.
Yeah.
As Christy Lemire called it, Chocolat to Electric Vindaloo.
Nice.
Hooray.
Actually,
more
really
electric
like Chocolat,
blah, blah things.
You know what? I'm usually against it, but this was a good one. This was a good variant.
Too close. Too close. Now you guys declared moratorium on electric boogaloo.
I have too. No,
for
I agree.
All people and for all time.
I think Vindaloo gets the
gets a pass
once. But it's this is once.
This is like this is good research for me, so that when I try to crack a joke in the future, when we're all sitting around each other, don't go to the electric boogaloo material.
It's over. It's tired. It's played out. It's been stopped.
There's so many other ones you could say. You know, the quickening legend of Curly's gold.
I say the secret of the ooze. Going back
there,
you go.
Bringing it back up
on the move.
Did you guys not see Step Up All In?
We luckily skipped that
one. I didn't see it. I lived it.
You and the crew you ran with back in the day?
That's right.
Those were movies. Like, there are a lot of movies that will go, and just because one of the benefits that Mark and I have is that we get to choose a lot of the movies that we have to see for our own website and for our YouTube channel, and we like to see like a lot of the smaller ones and as well as the bigger releases. But I think we could get away with not reviewing the Step Up franchise.
However, it's interesting because a lot of times these directors of like the dance movies, that's not their end game in life and their career is to make dance movies. Is they want to make action movies. So you can look at what they do and be like, that choreography is amazing. Look, I always look at dance movies like musicals, where the first 5 minutes of a musical, I'm like, this is stupid. They're singing. And then I get really sucked into it.
Yeah.
Dance movies are the same way.
Yeah, yeah.
I got really into that. What was the one where the guy from Lost teaches Chris Brown and his crew how to
Battle of the Year.
I kind of want these guys to win this battle, which I believe took place in France. Wasn't that where the end
B-boy,
battle was?
The Planet B-Boy thing?
I did not see it.
I think it ended in France, but yeah.
Well, when I see a movie like The Raid 2, I think of it like a musical in terms of like having, you know, like a really good fight scene can be like a good musical number in that it's not only sort of breathtaking to watch, but it also tells you something about the character and moves the plot forward.
By the way, you brought up Raid 2. I saw the Raid 2 with you. My most fun experience I ever had watching with another human being was to watch Alonzo watch the Raid. It was awesome.
I was there as well,
it was such genuine reaction to, like, because you could tell he appreciated everything going on, but it was so hard for him at some points to watch. It was amazing. I just wanted
because
to hug him at some point.
He's a giant baby.
It was great.
What I didn't get is that the movie is like 150 minutes, so I would figure by like the hour and a half mark, you would just not be shocked anymore as to what you're seeing, but it's like you kept forgetting. You had no short-term memory. You kept forgetting that a lot of blood's going to be in this next scene.
It's like playing peekaboo with a toddler. They think you've disappeared. They think you've gone away forever.
Another
knifing comes, and he's like, oh my goodness.
I don't get immured, like, you know. Each one is like the first one.
I've spent 19 years now watching him be a complete baby about gore and violence, and it's never not entertaining.
But I like that he reacts to it, but doesn't say, "Oh, it was just too graphic for me." Like, you love Raid 2.
Oh,
right?
I love that movie.
I'm
very proud. I'm very proud of him in that he doesn't reject that stuff out of hand. I remember sitting in a screening once of some terrible indie film, and before the movie started, there were a group of film critics who were sitting all around me discussing one of the Hostel films. And it was in that time when the Hostel movies were coming out. It was either the first one or the second one. And they were all discussing how they hated the genre and they would never go see a Hostel, you know, style film. And they were throwing out the words torture porn because that was in vogue at that moment as a slur, you know, really, to use against these films. And I remained silent during the entire discussion until finally one of the women turned to me and she said, "You haven't participated in this conversation, and I know for a fact that you love films like this.
Yeah.
So why do you like these kinds of movies?" And they all looked at me like with this very sort of
prove yourself
accusatory kind of thing. And I thought,
and now the prosecution.
I will not bow down to you people. and I said, I like them because I like to watch people get their heads chopped off. And no one talked to me for the rest of the time, and I won. I won that conversation.
Cinema.
That's great. Yeah, watching you guys at Evil Dead together, because we were sitting behind, we usually sit in front of you
totally
guys.
I totally remember that, yes.
And every time Dave would be laughing, Alonzo would be freaking out. It was so great to see the dichotomy and that you guys have to go home together.
I just want to go back and see Dave have that conversation with those women about the heads, and then in the middle of the movie go, "No, turn your phone off."
It's not So step up all in.
There's dancing, and then there's more dancing. Yeah. And then people talk, and the talking is dumb.
Oh, God, that's the talking is dumb.
How is the is it the best dancing of the franchise?
It is as good as the other films.
Is it the same movie?
Is it the same, like, people who do, like, the So You Think You Can Dance? And
yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah, Adam Shankman is one of the executive producers.
We went and looked up the credits of most of the kids dancing in the film, and boy, they make the rounds. They are in.
They were all in League of Extraordinary Dancers, whatever that was, and, you know, they were, a lot of them were in Battle of the Year, you know.
Yeah.
I called out Adam Shankman in my review because we're now 5 movies into this franchise about dancers. There is yet to be a single gay character in this entire series.
Not a single
one.
Well, no, you saw a lot of gay characters. They just didn't admit it.
Well, there may be some gay performers.
That's shocking to me.
Because there was even a gay guy in Battle of the Year.
Yeah, there was a gay character in a gay storyline in Battle of the Year.
Yeah.
And that was like a... That was a super kind of bro kind of movie. Yeah, like
Chris Brown was in it.
It wasn't really a dance film, you know, directed at that the normal market of young girls.
Adam Shankman's actually skywriting right now. I'm sorry.
he's writing, "I'm sorry for no gays."
Yeah, this wasn't Center Stage or, you know, Save the Last Dance.
Yeah, like there was. It is hilarious to me. I'm not offended by it, but I think it's hilarious that you can have a franchise that is strictly about young people dancing and not a single gay character, period. When I know guys here in the city who are dancers for this or that, you know, professionally, are not heterosexual guys.
I watched that show with my wife, and
somebody's making those costumes. That's all I'm saying.
Shocked me. I don't think I've seen any of the movies.
Dave is being kinder to this movie, I think, than I am. Because we've seen all of them, and I think that the dancing is appreciably better in especially 2 and 4.
Wow.
I know, like, Bibbs and Whitney are big fans of the series. They still love 3.
I will say that 2 and 4 are my favorites, and that the opening sequence of 4. Is straight up flabbergasting.
This is like, 4.
This is 5.
Come on, man. Keep up.
Known in France as Sexy Dance 5.
Oh, okay, good.
See, again, there's no reason to go to France.
That's a much better
franchise
title.
Is known as the Sexy Dance movies in France. But the... thanks, truck.
That sounded like the waves coming in on the ocean.
Yeah. Nice.
But the... I really love the dancing in these movies. It's aggressive and it's just chaotic and jittery and it's. I remember the opening sequence of Step Up 2, The Streets, and it began as a subway ride where no one was dancing, and then suddenly one person begins dancing, and it's like, why is this? Oh God, more of this. You know, the kids who come and break dance on the subways in New York. And, but by the end of the sequence, most of the people in the subway are dancing and flying across the ceiling of the subway car.
I love that.
Can anyone act in these movies?
Rad.
That's the problem. The problem is that when they stop dancing and start talking, we're in trouble. This movie, the lead guy, what's his name? Something Guzman?
Dance Man.
Ryan Guzman.
Ryan Guzman, who apparently is on Pretty Little Liars, where presumably he has to actually form sentences, is pretty, 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 and blank, blank, blank.
That's kind of how I felt with Jersey Boys.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So then, of course, the first Step Up starred Channing Tatum.
Right, right.
And so I'm sure in the back of his mind, he's thinking, that's going to be me. I'm going to have that.
Channing Tatum actually is a unicorn.
He's totally a unicorn.
Because he... He came up through this way that no one ever really comes up through.
Yeah.
Like stripper to
commercials.
You know, to background dancer to commercials and
he's taken the exact opposite of Ian Ziering's career.
Yes. Ian Ziering will become a stripper eventually.
He is now. I was in Vegas a couple weeks ago. I could have seen.
He was dancing with one of the sharks from Sharknado.
Did you put a 20 in it?
I didn't attend the show.
Come on, dude.
It was a 10.
That I'll admit to. I didn't attend the show. Don't check my Instagram.
So you want to be able to tell your grandchildren that you were at... Never mind.
You copped a field.
If Luke Perry was stripping,
you got teabagged.
Luke Perry teabagged me in Vegas.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's, you know, 8 seconds.
It's his first book.
Hang on for 8 seconds.
Nice.
Yeah, that's what I'm good for, is early 90s bad movie run. That's also my DVD pick of the week. Luke Perry in 8 seconds.
Yeah, anyway, so this Guzman guy is like square-jawed and looks... I mean, there are angles where he actually looks like if you took a comic book drawing and sort of made it, fleshed it out to where it looked like a human being, he would be the guy.
But he's
terrible.
How much percentage-wise is there dancing in the movie?
Lots of it.
Not enough.
There is a lot. A whole bunch of dancing.
Here's my problem with these dancing movies, is that they're a lot like the Fast and the Furious franchise, where I watch the fast cars go and I feel like I can do that. Like, I see the dancing and I'm like, the next time I'm at a wedding, look out. Because I got a lot of new moves to bust out.
My wife is it's weird, because my wife is a hardcore, like, So You Think You Can Dance fanatic.
Yep.
She won't miss an episode of it. So I
say her name.
Sadie.
Sadie, that's your wife's name.
Yeah, yeah.
I only ask you to do this because every time you bring her up in a conversation, wherever we happen to be, you always say, my wife. Yeah. You never say her name. Yeah. You always
she
say,
has a name.
My wife.
Yeah.
And I always think, is my wife her name? And then I think, maybe she was named my wife when she was
half
born.
The time he's referring to me, and he just doesn't want to say it.
But
you're just prison wife.
Mistress at this point. Sadie is a big fan of that franchise, but she never wants to watch the Step Up movies. It's weird. The Step Up, the first one with Channing Tatum. The worst one.
Yeah.
She watched, but instead it was fine, but she's never really cared as much, because I think... maybe she doesn't want to see the acting.
It's interesting that you bring up the Fast and the Furious franchise, because this has actually kind of followed a similar trajectory in that the first movie is kind of dull and takes itself too seriously. And at some point they kind of realize, oh, wait, people don't really care about the plot. They're here for the vroom vroom.
Right, yeah.
You know, and so it's the same deal where this one, where it's kind of like, yeah, there's a story and we're going to bring back characters from the other movies, but... really, we know why you're here.
Trolls dance.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's kind of like, I wish that it would make the leap of the Fast and Furious movies to get as absurd.
Yeah.
And for when they are talking, to have it be as entertaining.
They should rob a bank while they're dancing.
For instance.
Did, there were moments
in Brazil.
There were moments when I did think to myself, there were scenes where I thought, you know, they could really have taken this like to 11 right here. Like when they roll into Las Vegas in the fish market van,
right?
And they're all got their faces pressed up against the window,
or hanging out
the front, or hanging out the sides. I thought, why aren't you all on the roof dancing?
Yeah,
as you drive to Vegas, why are you not doing that? You should be doing that.
That's another thing. They go to Vegas, and I feel like that. I think now when you want to shoot in Vegas, they literally just hand you a shot sheet. Like, you have to get, you know, these helicopter shots of this. Yeah, they have to have the Bellagio fountain. Yeah. You have to show the Planet Hollywood casino from the outside. Yeah. You have to show the Eiffel Tower at Paris.
Six homeless guys.
We never get the homeless guys. It's always this glamour and, you know, neon. And by the way, we learned from between this movie and Think Like a Man 2 that it is now required in Vegas that you have to dance to a song by a former member of New Edition.
Yeah.
In Think Like a Man 2, it was Poison.
Right.
And in this one, it's Every Little Step.
Is this a replacement for the 80s franchise of Breakin'? Remember Breakin'?
It's ish. They did save like a community Breakin' center last time.
Yeah,
so,
Great. Okay.
I really like these movies just because I love the dancing. And I don't care. I just said this very thing on Press Play. We just got back from KCRW. And I said this on Press Play, and someone has already called me out on Twitter for saying it. But I don't care about the dialogue in these movies, and I don't think it matters. And the commenter said, "Well, dialogue always matters," and I disagree. It matters.
I agree with
when
you.
It matters.
But I think they could do all the things they do that are great, and have dialogue that was not terrible.
Well, I agree. I don't care.
But here's another example, I think, going with your point, is Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Pacific Rim, I didn't care about the dialogue. I didn't care about what was going on. I wanted to see monsters fighting robots, and I got that. As long as there was enough monsters fighting robots, I was okay. That was my problem with Godzilla, was that the fact that we didn't get Godzilla till the very end.
Right.
So when there was bad dialogue, I was present of it. If I'm a dancing fan, and I get enough dancing, I don't care if there's crappy dialogue.
But here's the thing. Given how hard it is to make a movie, and all the hoops that you jump through, and all the unemployed writers there are out there, if you've got a movie that has great monsters or dancing or whatever the thing is that can be created sort of in the lab or, you know, with the second unit or with whatever, why not, like, take another polish on that script and make it... No. Because
it's not the polish on the script, though, Alonso. It's the fact that you're getting... You're also... It's who you're getting. When you... Let's say where our pool is from these sort of thing, you can dance people. The chances of you being able to pull some good, talented actors and mixing them with great dancers is very tough.
You could still give them a script. It just almost seems like the rapid pace with which they need to churn these movies out doesn't lend itself.
You have a point. These dancers can't act, but you could write it in such a way where the dancers didn't have to do a lot of talking and you bring in a couple of funny people who do.
I guess.
Or, I mean, again...
But why hire the writer? Why hire the good writer to spend the money on when you know these kids aren't going to be able to deliver
what writer is going to want to say that, oh yeah, I wrote this movie and this movie and this movie and I wrote Step Up 5.
You have a point, but the thing is that I had a point now and I forgot what it was.
I feel like Dustin Hoffman's agent in Tootsie. Like, no self-respecting writer is going to write a Step Up movie!
Okay, but no, again, with the Fast and Furious movies, I mean, Vin Diesel and the late Paul Walker and The Rock are not, like, the most sparkling of comedy superstars, but boy, they sold those dorky lines.
But the difference with those guys is they've got the star power in the same way that, like, Stallone and those guys did back in the day. You're not expecting them to deliver Oscar-winning dialogue, per se.
It's cute that they showed up.
But they could do other movies. All those other guys could do other movies, too. Right. These step-up kids, God love them for being able to dance their ass off, but I don't know that they can open a movie.
And the Fast and Furious people, as an ensemble, deliver a kind of warmth.
Sure.
That when the acting isn't always there, there's something deeply affectionate about it. They, as an ensemble, come across as... A unit, you know, and they constantly talk about it. I know in the film, that's the most annoying.
We're a family.
It's the most annoying thing about the Fast and Furious movies is this nonstop reference to we're a family, and I'm like,
and because you guys
are actually just a bunch of friends who really like each other.
Because you guys called me out for being a wuss in horror and action movies, I have to point out again that Dave cried when Gal Gadot died in Fast 6.
Oh wow, that's twice.
That broke my heart.
Didn't
really. It took first of all, I wasn't expecting it. So it shocked me, and I was like, no, I got choked up. Wow. Like, so I was
so
like,
you're excited to see Wonder Woman.
She sacrificed herself for him. And that just, I got choked up.
It's going to be tough to bring her back. Like, they pulled a nice one with the Michelle Rodriguez coming back in the franchise. Yeah. It's going to be tough.
She can't.
That's when I'll stand up like Kathy Bates in Misery, like, no, I saw it. She was in the Cock-a-Doodle Fire.
she's for real dead.
Yeah. And so is the guy that she sacrificed herself to save. So
yeah, but when he dies, I was just like, okay, well, I guess if your girlfriend's gone, I guess you have to die.
It was a Romeo and Juliet at that point.
You know? Yeah. I mean, your death is kind of noble.
Sure.
You know, it's sort of like, I cannot go on. My heart is broken. I'm going to get in the most dangerous street race in the world just so I can go and be with the woman I love.
Yeah. I've never felt that way about a woman.
You know,
that I'll sacrifice myself or even want to pick her up in the next town.
There are moments when I think to myself,
will you drive her to the airport?
What would I do? Would I stand in front of a flying bullet for you? And maybe, you know, I
can
like
I just
to
push thanks, you Dave. Out of the way of the bullet so neither of us gets
I
hit.
I like
Is
to think.
Well, let's ask Alonso, how did you feel about that meal Dave cooked last night?
Yeah, how'd you like that?
Do you want to have the ghost of Alonso?
Well, you've actually provided us with a perfect segue because the guy who did write Step Up 5 also wrote Into the Storm.
Oh wow.
What are the odds? See? The odds are great because that makes a lot of sense to me now. Going back to what we were saying is you're not hiring the quality writers. This guy is a bad writer.
Yeah.
I mean, a really bad writer.
We're in the red. I can see it.
Occasionally it fluctuates.
Fix
Relax,
that.
Louise.
Fix it.
Instead of a dumb movie with dancers, it's a dumb movie with tornadoes.
And there's no flying cow in this one. In Twister, you had a flying cow.
Actually, you didn't. Only in the trailer was the flying cow. That got added. It's not in the movie.
In Twister?
No, it's in the movie.
No, it's in the movie.
Is it?
Oh, there's definitely
No, it's the tire.
The tire is in the movie.
It's the cow. The flying cow is
the cow is in the movie. The tire is.
I love the flying cow.
Yeah, Twister also came out at a much better time than Into the Storm for a movie like this, because no one had really seen CGI tornadoes like that look that cool on the big screen. And now we're just so spoiled that, unlike, you know, you go to a step-up movie to see dancing, we've seen enough movies that have great effects, that look realistic, that also have a good story and acting and dialogue, that you can't throw something like this at us and expect us to react the same way. Even though, if you're a huge fan of tornadoes, you want to go this and have this be your step up, it's just not going to live up.
Step up tornadoes.
Yeah, just step up to the barn.
What I liked about, because everyone's comparing this, you know, saying Twister on steroids, whatever it is, to it. For me, Twister had, because Helen Hunt at the time she did that movie,
and
was
Bill Paxton.
Big star power. There's no star power in this, except you have Thorin from the Hobbit movies, who I thought was in this movie was terrible. And I like him in the Hobbit movies.
I didn't even recognize him.
No, I thought he was terrible. We didn't either.
When I saw his name at the end, I was like, sexy Thorin Oakenshield.
Well, the way I compared
that was
him,
that dude right there.
Yeah, the way I compared him was this character seemed like a guy that in a Gerard Butler movie, Gerard Butler would be stealing the girl away from him because he's not the right guy for her.
Right. I thought he seemed like Gerard Butler's stand-in.
The fact that we couldn't get Gerard Butler in this movie because they couldn't afford it, and it just everything felt bad. The storyline, there's a storyline with this guy and his two kids. It's so horrible.
Yeah, it's bad. Badly written movie.
I felt bad for Matt Walsh, who plays the lead storm chaser, because he had to go from the incredibly great, snappy, witty dialogue of Veep into the storm, and it's like you see the look on his face, like I can't believe.
Like, why am I here?
And I thought that the girl from Walking Dead was pretty good,
Sarah Wayne Callie.
Yes, gosh, I've been like every time I'm supposed to speak of her on the microphone, I blank on her name.
I thought she was good. I would much rather have the movie be an hour and a half and all about them. Yeah. And I don't need storylines about the stupid family.
Well, it was an hour and a half, but it just would have been nice to have one real story. My favorite part was the rednecks, because that was a fun side story that I could get behind. That's what this movie was to me. I'd never got into any of the serious drama. I just liked seeing two idiots and then seeing a lot of tornadoes, and that's all I needed in this movie.
It was so dumb that I began looking at it as a slasher film, where I was cheering on the murderer and hoping that everyone on camera would get sucked up into the tornado.
It's hysterical you say that, because when they said, and then it can go off course and go to Los Angeles, I'm like, yes, go to Los Angeles!
Go to Los Angeles. Yeah.
Bring it!
Let's make a road trip movie about a tornado going across the country.
When it becomes a firenado and it eats the guy.
Chased by smoke.
Yeah. I was in love.
That was cool.
That was great.
There were some great effects, but the comedic moment of the whole thing is the guy from Veep when he goes up into the storm. And then he's in the clouds.
Just floating around.
He's
all silent and beautiful.
Oh, he loves it. And then he goes
back.
It's
like the end of Grease. You know, he just flies right up into the sunset.
It's a really dumb movie. And I think this is one of those movies that you hope people are avoiding in the theater.
I enjoyed myself because of the tornado effects.
Right, there's some fun.
Wouldn't you
be mad
if you paid for it, though?
No.
You wouldn't have been mad if you paid for it?
No. I wouldn't have wanted
That's
to
what
pay
I'm saying.
For it.
Yeah.
Having said that, though, we go to the drive-in out in
Montclair.
In Montclair about 2-3 times a year. You know, as often as we can get out there. It's like an hour, 15-minute drive. But the Mission Tiki drive-in in Montclair is awesome. And when I'm going to a drive-in, a movie like that is perfect.
Yeah.
Because I'm half paying attention anyway. I'm sitting in a lawn chair, you know, drinking beer with my friends and not really, you know, engaged, you know, with the movie.
Right.
I think the only time we were ever actually really into the films when we were there was when we saw Avengers and Fast 6.
Right, and even those we had already seen once.
And even those we had already seen once before. So we were, you know, up and down and back to concessions.
You don't
stuff
need
like
to
that.
Really invest at all. You can turn your head away and there's
I would pay to go to the drive-in to see Into the Storm and not feel bad about it.
Right.
Yeah,
because that's...
Because you can drink a lot of alcohol.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you literally can have a conversation while everyone else is talking in the movie and then turn back and go, oh, wait, here's a storm to kill some of those people we don't like.
Yeah.
Actually, weirdly enough, also has the same DP as Step Up All In.
Wow.
Like, I don't know.
It was Dancing Tornadoes.
I guess so, yeah. So.
With fire.
Real quick, I saw Deep Sea Challenge 3D, which opens this weekend, which is James Cameron goes to the bottom of the Mariana Trench.
That looks awesome. Is it cool?
Spoiler, they bring him back. It's interesting, but it is a 3D National Geographic special.
I eat that stuff up.
Yeah. Though. And so the thing is, it's also a 90-minute National Geographic special, so they have to kind of pad it out. So they not only recreate the Navy guys who went down the Mariana Trench in the 60s, they also recreate young James Cameron watching it on television and then building his own little cardboard, like, bathysphere.
Does he have, like, a cowboy hat on?
Practically, yeah. He might as well have, like, yeah, like a Davy Crockett thing going. You know, that's a little cutesy. But it's, you know, it is exactly what you think it's going to be, and it takes you kind of step by step, and the sort of the early dives where they realize, oh, wait, we've installed everything backwards, and da-da-da, you know, which luckily they're just doing, like, in Sydney Harbor, like, it's not deep yet. But, like, yeah, he's literally in this steel sphere that is one piece of steel that they have to, you know, it can't be riveted or anything because it would bust apart in the high pressures, which barely fits him, but him and all this sort of the gauges and the computers and the radio and whatever. So, like, if you're claustrophobic, this is maybe not the movie for you. But, it, you know, it was cool. You get to see him do the thing. And his wife, Susie Amos, who I don't think I've seen in a movie since Titanic, you know, pops up to talk about how awesome her husband is. And so there's that. So it's fine. If it sounds like something you'd want to see, it is something
I love that stuff. I just wish it was done by somebody other than James Cameron so he could focus on making, like, movies that aren't...
But he is. He's doing the Avatar. He's doing all three in a row.
But imagine how many more James Cameron movies we'd have if he didn't have this weird obsession with Titanic. Like, what if he just, like, playing racquetball instead of going under a seal?
He'd make documentaries about racquetball. then where would we be?
Squash! Exclamation point. Was there anything else this week?
No, DVD picks.
Really? Well, my DVD pick is actually The Ballad of Little Joe, because it was this amazing Susie Amos performance back when she was a working actress from the 90s. She plays, it's a true story of a woman who basically survived out west by living as a man. And she pulled it off for years, and it's a very kind of quiet, understated film. Maggie Greenwald directed it, but really terrific performance, and just seeing her in this Deep Sea Challenge thing reminded me, oh yeah, Susie Amos, she was awesome. And, you know, it's kind of like Phoebe Cates. They just decide, I'm going to go have kids now and just do that.
Phoebe Cates. You talk about the Doc Brown time machine to go see Dave sing in church. Yeah. You can have fun with Dave in church. I'm going back to Phoebe Cates right before she got famous.
Drop Dead Fred.
Oh, I would take her Drop Dead Fred era. I would take her Drop Dead Fred.
I'd take her in any era.
Yeah,
for Blu-ray, for me, you know, it's funny. I was originally going to say The Raid 2, but we've talked about it a lot.
You know what's even funnier?
What?
I was going to say The Raid 2. And probably for the same reason.
But, you know, I don't know where you guys stand on this movie. I think we talked about it briefly, but I saw it in the theater and liked it more than I thought I would, and then the Blu-ray came out, and that's Noah.
I was a fan of Noah.
I was a fan of Noah.
I liked it.
I think it's kind of a mess, but it has...
It's messy, I agree, but I think as far as a look and as far as the Blu-ray transfer itself and the sound, I don't think it's exactly what you think it is, and I liked that element. It might be for the same reason some people don't like it, but there's like kind of like a fantastical type thing.
It captures the wildness of the Old Testament in a way that I was really pleased by.
The messiness of the
Old Testament. Yeah, definitely. I don't know. For me, it kind of felt like a movie I didn't know who it was for. I felt like it wasn't weird enough for Aronofsky people, but it wasn't safe enough for Bible people.
But I think that's why I liked it. Because it was so... I really was expecting it to knock me over the head with religious themes, and then it definitely doesn't do that. And it almost gives you... I don't know. And I really liked what Russell Crowe did as Noah. It was a different version of Noah. So it's a movie, if you haven't seen it, it's a Blu-ray that you should pick up and check it out. Mm-hmm. It's a good transfer, too.
Yeah, since you guys took The Raid 2 already, I didn't have a backup, so I'm going to go with something I got for my birthday, which is actually a TV show, but it's the True Detective Blu-ray, because I was like the last person to ever see True Detective, and I still haven't finished it yet, but it's neat to have the Blu-ray, because there's a lot of cool extras, and you get to see some behind-the-scenes stuff. And
what do you think of it now?
I haven't finished it yet, so I don't want to talk about it. I have seen the second episode, and the way to watch that second episode is on Blu-ray, because everything is crystal clear.
Wait till you get to episode 5.
Yeah.
Mine is really obscure. You can see it on the internet. It's streaming generally for free. I found it in a couple different places. It's called Food. It's a...
I've heard of Food.
It is a, yes.
not Food Inc.
No, Food.
I love Food. Yeah. What is Food?
It is a...
Starring Indian Relic.
It's not a feature. It's about 50 minutes long. It's a so technically, it's a short film from 1972. It's directed by the artist and photographer Robert Frank, and it's about these two artists, Gordon Mata Clark and Carol Goodman, in New York in the early 70s. They opened a conceptual restaurant where they got...
It's the idea of dinner.
People from the art world, they've got other artists and people from the art world in to create meals for this restaurant. It was open in Soho. It wasn't around for, you know, a very long time. But Robert Frank made a little short documentary about it, and it's really cool.
That's cool.
And really, you know, it's the kind of thing where you're watching it and you think, this might happen. It would never happen in New York now, because New York is now just this sort of gross playground for super rich people who are jerks. But it could happen in maybe Chinatown or you know, Highland Park in Los Angeles. In fact, in a way, do you remember going with me? We all went to Gutter Cafe in Highland Park.
Oh, the bowling alley.
At Mr. T's bowling alley. Uh-huh. And it was a cafe that they set up in a little corner of this decaying bowling alley where punk rock bands played. Nice. It wasn't open for very long, but boy, the food was nice.
Really good breakfast. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, I think it could exist in a space like that.
Like a pop-up?
Yeah. But it's a really great movie. It's fascinating, and it's just this time capsule from the early 70s. And watching The 100-Foot Journey made me think about it. And so I went hunting.
And if you Google it, you have to write Food Movie, because otherwise you'll never get to the movie. But just write Food.
We'll post a link on the Facebook
If you
page.
Want to Google it before we post a link, just type Food and Robert Frank,
because
he's the director. We're done. Now, we've gone on for like 90 minutes. We need to wrap it up.
Fine.
We'll do letters next week.
All right. Well, gentlemen, it was been a thrill to have you here.
Yeah, I loved it.
We hope you had a good time.
Absolutely. Loved coming on.
Tell people where they can find you.
Pretty easy.
Tell your stuff.
You can go to schmozno.com. We got all of our stuff there, as well as youtube.com/schmozno. And we just launched a full podcast network, the Schmozno Movies Podcast Network.
Very excited about that.
Cool. Meet the Movie Press and Jedi Alliance. A lot of cool shows.
And you can find Christian at Christian Harloff on Twitter. I'm at 5150 Ellis, and we are at Schmozno. We both get that. So like us on Facebook.
And we'll put links to all that stuff on the Facebook page.
Thank you, buddy.
So thank you for listening. As always, we point you to folks we know. Go to ChristyLemire.com. We will be, by the time you hear this, we will just been on Derek and Romaine again, but we're on on there once a month.
Well, we were on last week for 2 minutes.
Exactly. That was an accident.
So
we're on that show, and Frank DeCaro every so often
they booked us without meaning to book us.
On Sirius XM.
We were on for like 60 seconds. They were like, we've got too many people on the air. And I was like, goodbye, I'm going to grill a steak.
In the podcast universe, check out the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney. Check out Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley. Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion cast, the Schmoes Know, of course. Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at iTunes. Please leave us a positive review. It helps other folks find the show. This program is also streaming at Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com or on our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast, which if you haven't liked yet, please do. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at TVTag.com. Drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com with questions, comments, top 10 lists, bottom 10 lists, funny things that happen to you in movie theaters. You can PayPal us $20 at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com for a t-shirt.
And you will get a t-shirt.
Give us your size and mailing address.
We've got one large left.
Okay.
So I'm taking that.
All the other sizes, we've got one large left.
Yes, I
take you as a medium.
We've got smalls, mediums, XLs, and double XLs.
My boobs tend to show through the medium, so the large makes it look like pecs.
You can also PayPal us $1.99 for any of our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes, where we talk about Josie and the Pussycats, or Clue, or The Apple, or... Two for the Road or White Christmas.
Yes.
And visit linoleum-knife.com, where Dave's going to be writing lots of new original material.
No, that's not true. That is not a fact. I'm taking most of August off.
So what happened to your summer movies series?
I'm going
to
do one more
summer
movie thing. But then I'm not going to do much in August, because I've got to finish writing my book.
Fair enough.
My book has to be finished. I must finish writing the book.
Cool.
And
is it a Christmas movies book? Because there's already one of those.
Yeah, I read that other Christmas movies book.
Have yourself a movie, Little Christmas. Pick it up now.
I will kick that dude's ass. There's not going to be stopping me when my book, when my Christmas movie book drops. All memories of earlier Christmas books will be obliterated.
And fighting words.
Obliterated like Gail Godot at the end of Fast and Furious.
Before we forget, there is also now on Facebook the Linoleum Knife group page, fan page, some listener page, where listeners can go and talk to each other about stuff.
Our listener, Gabe, set it up.
Yes, y'all can.
We don't actually have any control over
it. Not really, no.
It's a fan page. He set it up. He's the administrator.
So
we pop in from time to time and say things.
Go and interact. Tell people that they are wrong. To your heart's content. Yeah. Thanks again to Blue for our theme music. Go visit him at bluetopia.com. And yeah, if you haven't checked out the Brett Easton Ellis podcast, I was on this week. It was fun. He was a really interesting conversationalist, and we talked about movies and stuff. So, you know, it's at podcastone.com/Brett Easton Ellis, I believe.
/http://
You're cool. Anyway, there's a link on the Facebook page. Anyway, we thank you for listening. Thank you, Schmoes, for being here. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.